Welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. And I know we say it's always a special episode, and I know you're getting tired of that phrase, but this time we really do have a special episode. This is Marcel. I'm here with my co-hosts Ryan, Jason, and Corbin. But due to the announced GP Vegas and Modern Masters 2013, we had to go get some official word on what's going on. So we brought Helen Bergeau to the podcast. Thank you for coming, Helen.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
This is a big deal. We're glad that you were able to take the time out of your schedule to come here, and we have a lot of questions to ask. So we got a short time. There was some technical difficulties, so this cast is a little shorter for our listeners. Please understand, and we'll try to get this going. But Jason, Ryan, any, you guys got anything you want to say?
Nope, we're just pleased to be joined by one of our favorite people at Wizards of the Coast.
Thank you.
It's true.
Indeed. Ever since she came out to the original Vegas, she actually came out to the house that we rented, and she had a good time, and we enjoyed it, and we got to see the personal side of Helen, and it really made us enjoy Magic that much more, and Wizards of the Coast, and we look, you know, it was a good impression. But let's start off with telling everyone, because there's going to be people that don't know who you are or what you do within Wizards, and could you give them a brief?
I've been with Wizards for a long time. Magic and me, it's a long love story. I discovered actually Magic when I was working for previous job back in 94. It was during a PlayStation. I was working on games, and I, you know, started playing Magic, and I was saying, wow, that game is so different. I've never been playing something like that before. And then the year after, I was looking for a job at the time where Wizards of the Coast was opening their office in Paris. So I applied for the position, thinking that, having the marketing background that was part of the job description, plus knowing how to play Magic, that was really the job for me. So I started actually almost exactly 19 years ago, because my start date was what seems like December 18th. So yeah, 19 years ago I started with Wizards of the Coast, and never stopped from here. So I'm very glad I'm had the chance to see Magic grow, develop, see an incredible community, and had the chance to to contribute to the game and just participate in the community as well.
So you've actually been around for almost the entire run here, which is a lot more than, some of the other people who, are very visible from Wizards of the Coast, but you've actually seen it all.
Well, my experience is very unique in the sense where I started in France, so just like from, mm-hmm. A small office angle, because when we opened up the French office, there were 8 of us, I think. So we were basically doing everything. That was fascinating.
Right.
Like running tournaments, running the products, doing everything. Everything was actually to be done at the time. And then my job started changing when I moved to, when I was offered a position to, in our European office. It was in Europe at the time. So, looking at the different perspective on the game. And of course, it took also a brand new dimension when I relocated here in Seattle about 7 years ago, because I relocated in October 2007. So a lot of different things about Magic, because the game was a very, very different position, of course, spot when we started, and it has been a very exciting year so far.
So do you like to play Magic at all? I know you're surrounded by Magic, but how much do you get to actually consume Magic, and how do you play it when you get the opportunity to?
Okay, so it's I like playing Magic, but I'm not a good player, because I don't build the patience. And it's something that I'm always like, regret that I have not had a good chance, not taking the time to play more. So I was very happy actually when my team a couple of months ago was telling me, oh, you should participate in the Community Cup. I said, well, good opportunity to play Magic. I had a ton of fun, because Magic is a very, very fun game. So it was a lot of fun, even if I was a little bit rusty.
And what do you play? What's your favorite format if you were to play, if you had to play one?
It's difficult to say, because especially here, in my team, most of the people playing Magic the Commander, which is I don't really like the format. I prefer, things where I play more limited, because it's a surprise. You don't know what's going to in the packs that you open, so I really like them. I really like the concept of being limited.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's too bad. I was hoping you would say Commander.
Before I started with that, say, yes, I know everybody should say Commander. You say, I'm surrounded by people who say Commander every single time they have the opportunity to play Magic.
Well, I mean, it's certainly understandable that you don't have a lot of time to play because you seem to be one of the, one of the busiest employees with Wizards. You're always everywhere and you're always interacting, with the community, you know, through Twitter and Facebook and everything. I mean, what is it, you know, it's really kind of a unique take the way that, how open you are with the community on everything going on with Magic and with WotC. What is your approach, you know, when you're dealing with the community? I know you have people, you know, bombarding you with questions every day.
So first off, it was, I have to be very honest, it was a surprise to me that there was so much interest in organized play, because when we started just like, you know, saying, oh, we are going to interact with the fans, I was saying, that's great, but who is interested in knowing that I'm working on the next wave of GPs or equivalent? And when I realized that there were so many questions and so much passion about, you know, my own passion, which is organized play, great, it's a fabulous opportunity for me to just like know how peers feel about the events that we run for them, because it's something that I always want my whole team to keep in mind. We run events for the players, so it's their satisfaction and their happiness that matters. And so getting that close contact is like an amazing opportunity to get a different perspective, you know, to see how, you know, everything that we're doing is being received. And it's also a good opportunity to understand what is not well perceived by the fans, especially when it comes to our intent. Sometimes, you know, we are building these plans and we say, well, just like we are doing that for that given reason, but, you know, doesn't mean that it's that obvious for the community. And having dialogue is a good way for me to reevaluate what is not PR's messaging so that we can say, our intent here is like, you know, is not well understood. So this is where we have to make sure that, you know, we have the chance to clarify that, to see actually if it changed the perception about how the event work or actually it's because we have to just revisit what we're doing because it's not something that players want.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, yeah, well, it's certainly, I think, like I said, unique that people are able to just reach out and ask you a question and get a response. And I know that that's something that the Magic community has that a lot of other games don't.
Yeah, I think most people in business, like, they try to use social media to reach out to their customers and interact with them. And they go about it in just the most horrible way possible. And just how Wizards has embraced it has been really refreshing and looking forward to continuing to interact. So as far as interacting with you, I do remember, like, when you came by Vegas, everyone kept asking you questions about Magic this, Magic that, what about this card, organized play. When you get to these social settings, like, does it grind down on you when everyone just talks Magic? Is there, what is a good thing for someone to come talk to you about other than Magic?
Well, I have many things I'm interested in, and I do understand that Magic is the first topic that comes up because that's what brings people together. Just like, and you know, to come back to what you were just saying about these interactions that we all have, you know, a lot of people from what you have, it's also because it's what makes Magic very, very unique. The game, you know, would not be the game it is today without all the players who have been behind this community for a long time. And that's something that we really value. And that's also why, back to your, you know, most recent question, I do understand that people talk to me about, you know, their deck and their cards and the Magic is in the first place. But I like talking about life in general, about, you know, about traveling, about, you know, sharing different experience, because for me, having the chance to live in different countries, I'm always discovering, you know, new things in the way people, it's very refreshing. It's just like, and it's something that I'm fascinated about, just like understand the cultural differences even between states, and so I always love hearing from other people when they just like realize that their take on life can be different.
I mean, that is the fun part of life, just getting to meet all the different people and their perspectives and what they get to bring to the table.
That's a true story. That's really like a big part of what pushed me to get into like what I do with magic as well. Speaking of that, actually, so since you've done so much traveling and kind of tying it into magic, like you've obviously been to a lot of these major events in these past couple of years, and you know, you've seen a lot of some of what you would call, I guess, the great plays in magic. Do you have a particular moment or deck or even season or player that like you really just remember being like, that's why I love the game of magic, like watching something happen or something unfold or watching somebody's season go from where it started to, you know, them winning something major?
Actually, I'm very lucky because I have this type of moments, you know, every single time I'm attending an event. And that's what keeps me going, because just like, ultimately people think that I love traveling. I hate it. It's just like nothing. It's just like not sleeping in my own bed, just having to spend time on a plane or whatever. But it doesn't matter because it's worth it for the experience that you get, you know, being out and just having the chance to attend these events. Our last event was in Nice, and we were having two extremely important events, the World Championship and the World Magic. And it was a long week for us because, you know, lots going on. But the moment where I was looking at the different teams being so proud about representing their country and just having some amazing outfits to represent their culture. And so it was just like so overwhelming. It was this wow moment where I say, I really love that tournament. We have something for the World Magic Cup, which we call the Spirit Award. So we are giving a prize to a couple of teams, which we thought that represent well the spirits of the World Magic Cup by making the effort about, you know, representing creatively their team and or their country. And this year, we gave the Spirit Award to three different teams. First, it was Guatemala, they were having fabulous jackets, and they were carrying their flag everywhere. First thing that we were putting on the table, then we were starting a game against another team. That was really funny. We had Team Dominican Republic, who had a custom a costume representing Garou. They were so amazing. It was very funny. And then there is Team Indonesia with a very typical outfit. And one of the team members gave me his hat. And so I kept the hat, and I look at it, and I remember that moment where just like, look at their face. They were so happy to be here playing for their country. And that's certainly my most recent one moment about saying, oh, magic is really awesome. And these tournaments that bring together so many different players from so many different horizons, just like they are very unique.
Yeah, that became, I'd never been to, you know, I've been to Pro Tours, but I hadn't been to the World Magic Cup before, you know, at least in the capacity last week where I had a chance to really interact with the teams. But it was great seeing all those, especially really the small countries, who those guys have never played in a tournament larger than a PTQ or, you know, maybe a Grand Prix. And they've certainly never been at, you know, that high level of an event. It was really awesome to see all those guys come out and be able to play.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be really amazing to see everybody come out to play in GP Vegas and the other locations, which I'm sorry, I can't recall. It's only GP Vegas.
He remembers the one important to him.
So the other location are Utrecht in the Netherlands and Shiba in Japan. So because I'm sure that there are fans who are just like, love the fact that, you know, there is a Utrecht and a Shiba as well.
Right. So, I mean, I'm sure we're all looking forward to, you know, being at these GPs again. Vegas was so great the last time around. It makes sense to expand it to the rest of the world. How long has this been in the works? I mean, when did you guys know that you wanted to do a second set and you wanted to expand it and you know, really put everything in place?
Aha. Uh-huh. So that's a very good question. Actually, at the time we had Vegas number one, Vegas last year. Mm-hmm. And looking at the response from the community, we were already thinking about planning another one. We just knew that it should not be too soon, so that we kept it special. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, normally we are looking more at just, like, the local community first, to just not the number of players in the local community, but to select the cities where we run a GP. For Vegas, it's very different from the beginning, because it's more like a destination by itself, where we feel that, you know, a number of people are likely to travel just because it's Vegas.
Right.
Looking at that, we were thinking just like, this GP Vegas is very special. Players, we love them. They are happy to have a very different experience that gathers thousands of over fans, because it was huge. And I was first a little bit concerned about what it would mean for the experience. But again, the reaction was so just positive. There were so many stories out of Vegas that we were thinking, we have to do it again. There is no doubt that we have to do it again. We just have to find a good opportunity. And that opportunity was like, you know, the perfect match with having Modern Master with the 2015 edition. So that we're safe. Here we go. So we have been working on that event for a while. Because we also wanted to make sure that we would meet the expectations of the fan and deliver again something fairly unique.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the first one was so unique. A lot of people, you know, were really obviously super interested to have a chance to open a Tarmogoyf for something like that. You know, one of the things I remember, you know, people talking about was it was the first set of, you know, mass reprints kind of since, you know, Chronicles or the old core sets. Is the print run was something that was discussed a lot. I mean, is that how, I know obviously we're going to have different languages this time. I mean, how do you guys kind of set, you know, your outlook on how much product do you want to put out there while still making it feel special?
Well, so we gave a number of details when we announced the launch of Modern Masters 2015 edition. Mm-hmm. So first off, yes, it's a limited edition. We want to keep it special, but we have learned from the first edition, so we don't want this edition to be too hard for players to get their hands on. And if you just like look at, as an example, the capacity that we have for the free GPs to celebrate the launch edition, gives you a sense about the fact that we are serious about making the product available to fans. Because, you know, we are just like being prepared for, you know, 20,000 players. So just nowhere near where we used to be. We just like with the very first edition of Modern Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what other lessons did you guys learn from the first set in terms both of, you know, creating a set for players to have, but also, you know, running such big events? I mean, it was set a record for the largest, you know, card tournament ever hosted. And that's obviously was a crazy weekend. I mean, what all did you guys learn from just the whole experience that you were able to apply this time around?
Oh, we learned a ton from that experience. First off, the feedback that we heard loud and clear from the, you know, players outside of the U.S. were saying, hey, we feel a bit, you know, just like left behind because there is Vegas, which is awesome, but what is there for us?
Right.
But this time around, we decided to run, you know, another super large event in Utrecht, which is very accessible for people living in Europe, and the other one in Japan because it's a fabulous venue where we have been hosting Worlds back in 2010. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that we learned. Say, let's make sure that we deliver an event that feels more global to just have the overall community. The second thing is that, you know, it's true that it was the very first time where we just like were running such a large event, and when we were looking at just like the rate of pre-registration for Vegas in 2013. It was very intimidating to say, wow, we have like 2,000 players, 3,000.
Right.
It seemed that it would never stop. So, what we learned is just like to be a bit better prepared and just like, from the beginning, having our plan into our order about the, how we would organize the venue, how we would organize the registration. So that to make sure that we would just like, you know, would be able to announce the capacity ahead of time.
That's right.
And build all the staff with RTO, just like, you know, General Variable and Cascade Games, who are just supporting on that event from the beginning, because we learn a lot about just like saying how much staff you need to figure out and you need to have on board. We learn also about organization of the room. There are things that work extremely well. Specifically the way we were dividing the tournaments in a different section, you know, are recognizable by the color, so that, you know, be better players. So all these learnings are going to be extremely useful for us to make sure that we would just like we're going to deliver the best experience to the players. However, something that a thing that we also learn is that 4,000, 5,000 players starts being a very, very large tournament. And that's why we decided for that event to actually split it into GPs once we are going to reach 5,000 registered players. Because we felt that trying to run one single tournament of more than 5,000 players is going to potentially undermine the quality of the experience. That's something that, you know, we want to be really, really paying attention, because it should be fun for everybody. That's the first thing.
Yeah. So one thing that I do notice is we're getting more and more of these larger events, and 5,000 may, in the next couple of years, may be just something that happens regularly. And I do notice, though, that there's a whole different feel and vibe with these different events. Like so the bigger events feel more like a convention, where the smaller events feel like more of a competitive feel, but they're both labeled as GPs. Is this something that you want, this fragmented experience with Magic? Is this just the nature of the beast? When you get the bigger events, you get more casual players, or is this how you want the GP structure?
Well, it's part of how the learning curve, because just like the GPs have become more and more popular over the past years, and we are still just like at that phase where we see how things are received in the different parts of the world. Ideally, you know, I would like to be in the situation where we can offer unified experience to the players, so that when you see that there is GP blah, which is organized, you know, 2 hours away from you, you kind of know what type of experience to just have to expect. But now that we're starting building experiments, an experiment with larger events, maybe this is something that we want to investigate further and actually create brand new type of tournaments that would be more like fitted to huge crowd. That's what we are, you know, trying to look at right now. Because at the core of the GP, there is always the tournaments. And as I was saying before, I want to make sure that we don't compromise the tournaments by adding a number of things, because there are still a high number of players who do attend GP primarily to compete in just tournaments. All the other activities are great for, you know, just all people who are casually want to check it out. But GP is first off about that tournament. So that's why I think that we have some room for continuing innovating. And I'm absolutely confident that Degas next year will teach us even more lessons about, you know, what works, what fans are excited about, you know, what we can, you know, start thinking about for 2016.
Well, we saw one of those different sort of formats last weekend, where there were kind of two different ways to get two different events to get into day two. Is that something we can see more of in the future?
So if you refer to GP Milan, the circumstances were extreme. We are faced to have just like an upcoming strike of public transport, which may, you know, impact hundreds of years, as they might not be able to reach the venue on time. That's why we were looking at, you know, a different way of running the tournament, so that players arriving late could join the tournament. And this is how we landed with the idea of having two different flights, one starting at the regular time and one later in the day. However, the challenge is that when you alter the structure of day one, that has some implications on day two. And we learned a lot of things about this structure that we just like innovated for Milan. And it was very, very interesting, because first off, lots of players were understanding the, you know, just like the convenience about having the two flights. But I also got a lot of feedback about the fact that it didn't feel anymore like a GP, which has been always my concern, you know, because that idea of flight has been floating around for a while. But I felt that, you know, from what I heard so far, there is that excitement from players to know that there is, like, at given point of time, 2,000 players playing the same round. It gives that, you know, a different feeling that, about the fact that the GP is something different. And when you start running different fights, you are losing that. So that was the first thing. The second thing was, like, the fact that, you know, day two had to be different because it was a brand-new tournament. And so we had to adjust a couple of things in terms of, you know, making sure that the day would not be too long. And of course, you land on a system where you cannot reproduce exactly the way a regular Grand Prix works. And as much as you technically have a Grand Prix, I've received quite some feedback about the fact that it was like disruptive for the players, because we were thinking, hey, regular GP, this is what I would get. Here I don't get it. And this is where I think that the structure is very interesting, but maybe not for a Grand Prix. Because back to your question earlier on, I think that it's important to offer for a tournament which is called a Grand Prix, a unified experience, regardless of where the GP happens.
Okay. Speaking of different formats, actually, we had a question about the new F&M structure, which is very open to all kinds of different new formats. Now, we have formats that previously haven't really been played that much at any level, such as Pauper. I know Two-Headed Giant is my favorite format, and that's a format that's all been – it went from having like a GP to not really being supported at all. Can we take this sign that these are sanctionable at the F&M level to be that that's something Wizards would be open to sanctioning at a higher level in the future?
So what we are doing with F&M is just like, you know, we want the experience to be as fun as possible. And what is fun with Magic is to experience different formats. So that seemed to be like the perfect place where, you know, to offer a variety of formats. And just like I'm very excited to see how it's going to be received. Actually, by the organizers and the players, it may take a few months before we see a lot of innovation, but I'm confident that over time, we're going to see more and more interesting formats being played at F&M. What does it mean for other levels of play? It's a little bit premature, because this is where we have to learn and to see what actually is being loved by both the organizers and the players, because I'm sure that, you know, most stores have never been running so many formats. However, we need to keep in mind that some formats are better kept in a certain, you know, context. Because you talk about Two-Headed Giant, which is a format that I personally like a lot. I think it's really fun to observe. It's just like, okay, you have a lot of possible stories around that format. I was at the GP that was using that format, and I can tell you that never again, because it's not adapted to that type of tournaments, as an example. It doesn't mean that we cannot have Two-Headed Giants at a higher level of play, but, you know, for having tried, say, maybe not a GP, but we need always to, you know, just have to keep the game fresh. I want to keep the experience fresh, so we're going to see what players like and to see how we can just, like, you know, maybe offer this format at different levels. This is what I'm just trying to say, probably not GP level. But there are many, many other levels of play that where we can, you know, just like introduce more formats.
That's excellent. So speaking of F&Ms and really the local level, I've been playing really like at local shops and stuff for probably 10 or 15 years, and I've kind of watched as, you know, Wizards has taken these steps to go from these big to start the big pre-releases and then moving those down to the store level, and then now the PTQs. It really seems like there's this big focus on not necessarily taking away from the tournament organizers, because they're getting more tournaments to run, but also really bringing the local level more access to, you know, the bigger tournaments, letting them get that experience of a pre-release to be able to get better, and then maybe attend these F&Ms, and then from there go try the PPTQs. I mean, so far I've really liked what I've seen, and I guess the real big question is, where is this going to be in 5 years? Is there an end game for where Wizards want to get at the local level, or as far as organized play goes, or is this just something that as it goes, it, you know, you're coming up with different new ideas?
So we really consider the stores being like the heart, the Magic communities. These were just like players go to meet their, you know, friends, just like stopping over format. This is why we have this high level focus on just like making sure that we're offering fun and diverse experiences at store level. As you were saying, just like the type of events that we have been offering at store level has been evolving a lot over the past 5 years. And of course, it's always a learning curve, because we are growing as much, you know, as the stores are growing. And there are some amazing events that have been being run by stores. Just like I had some very great reports from stores who were super excited to run their first primary PTQs over the past weekend. So it tells me that actually, you know, we still have some potential. We still have some room to grow there. First off, I want to make sure that we get just like the primary EQs and equivalent rights. But we'll start about what would be the next thing that we are offering at that level. Because again, this is where, you know, we see the magic communities form and grow. So we want to make sure that we keep on adapting the offering that we have at store level to make sure that we keep on satisfying the fans there.
So one thing that's been preventing people from growing, I know in Canada they've been complaining about the PPTQs, is that you need an L2 judge to get to run one of these events. Before, you just needed to have a rules advisor. And it's a lot, and it's been, Jeremy Schofield has been proven to be having difficulty trying to acquire his L2. He wasn't able to get there. Is there going to be some way that getting the judge program accelerated for some of these less populated areas so that people are able to run more PPTQs often? And what's the strategy behind that?
Absolutely. That's a very good question. So first off, the reason why we defined that the requirement was a level 2 is to, because the PPTQ is a big deal and we need to make sure that we ensure the integrity of the tournaments. With that said, you know, we have also looked at the availability of level 2 and just like the potential number of primary PTQs before setting up that criteria, that requirement. It works in most cases, but we know that we have to make sure that the judge program goes at the same time to the PPTQ. And we're also already working actively with just like the judge community to get there. Primarily from, you know, the effort driven by the regional coordinators who are just like encouraging level 1 to level up. And we are creating these opportunities for level 1 who are willing just like to do more, to test. Something that's happening at the same time is also the change that we have done on the Grand Prix trials, because now that the Grand Prix trials work the way they work, so where a store, wherever they are located, pending they have the right level in the Wizards Play Network, can run one Grand Prix trial per month, which is a way for them to make their vision very special. So that specific change is actually a very good training opportunity for a lot of judges. And that's what we are trying to make happen, but just like to connect the dots, to help people connect the dots. You see, you have regional coordinators who are willing to help you develop your judge skills. And on top of that, you have store-based events such as like Grand Prix trials that are your opportunity to practice as a judge. So we are already seeing an increase in the level 2. Because technically, you know, you can just like level up from level 1 to level 2 in about a month. Of course, just like depending on the time that you can dedicate to the exercise. So I'm very excited because I'm pretty sure that, you know, very shortly we are going to see more and more level 2s emerge.
Thank you, Helen. I'm sorry that we had to cut the interview short, and to listeners. And is there any way, let people know where they can contact you at and they want to get more information about you?
Well, just like I always love to hear from just players how, you know, they like our events or what they don't like, because feedback should go both ways. And you know, one of the platforms where it's very easy to share that feedback is on Twitter, where just like the very straightforward Twitter handle, which is at Hélène Vergeau.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate you coming on. Hopefully, we'll get you back again for some more questions that we have.
And I hope to see you in Vegas next year.
Oh, yes, we will definitely be there.
Oh, we're there. It's my
we'll
birthday,
see you there.
So we're there.
I'm planning to be there as well. It's also another good opportunity. Yeah. Okay.
We already have the house booked, ready to go, and it's a mini mansion, so it's nice.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm sorry I have to just like to leave, but it's really I have another meeting that I need to attend.
No, it's
that's
totally
okay.
Fine.
We understand.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.